I'm the fourth research leader at Pendleton, Oregon. Ray was the first. And I was acquainted with Ray for a short year and a half when I was in St. Paul, Minnesota in 92 and 93. And had I known then that I was going to become research leader, I would have gotten to know him better and asked him a lot of questions. I am fully aware of the challenges he faced at Pendleton. Okay, I'll start by just indicating where Pendleton is. It's in the northeastern part of the state, and the black dot right there is where Pendleton, Oregon is located. It's essentially in northeastern Oregon, but it's situated in the southern extent of the interior Columbia Plateau region. And it's typically a very semi-arid region. A lot of winter wheat is grown there, and the primary stakeholders would be the winter wheat producers in that region of Washington, Oregon. The center itself was constructed in 1970, and it's one of the multidisciplinary units within the ARS system. This facility houses the Oregon State University, about five scientists, and we jointly share this facility with the experiment station. When Ray came to the center, it was in 1971. He had just come off of started his career in Morris, Minnesota, came out to Pendleton, Oregon. The staff at that time was very small. On the right or the left is Ron Rickman, who is a soil scientist. He started there in 1968 and remained there until about his retirement in 1999. Next to him is Marion Hibbert, who was the administrative officer at the time. Bob Ramig was another soil scientist. This is Ray. And Paul Rasmussen and Les Eakin. Les was the only permanent technician. As I mentioned, the staff is quite small in the beginning stage. Ray was about 45 years old at this time. This is a commemorative plaque for Marion Hibbert when she retired in 1985, and it was cut from a tree, pine tree that one of many that had grown at the station. It too was retired in 1985. It was planted in 1958, and it marks several important events, such as 1970 when the building opened for the first time, when Ray Maris arrived in 1971, and when Betty Klepper was appointed research leader in 1985. She was the second research leader after Ray. And Ray, of course, left in 1985 to go to Minnesota, and I'll mention that later on in my talk. Interestingly, this tree was planted in 1958, about the same time that Ray started his career in 1960. I want to say a few things about Ray as an administrator and a leader, and I'm going to paraphrase from comments that I received from the scientists that served under him, such as Ron Rickman and Paul Rasmussen, Clyde Douglas, and Betty Klepper, and Jill Pykel. And so I'm going to read from some crib notes here, just to make sure I paraphrase this correctly. According to Betty Klepper, Ray was brought up in the Herr Doctor Professor era when the head of the lab called the shots. His name appeared on many papers that left the lab, as was the custom in those earlier times. He did things as a strong leader that he thought he should do because of his position. Ray ran his administrative duties in the same way he ran his research. Get it done, but do it right and answer questions later. There's a story that was given to me by Ron Rickman. And Ron told me that sometimes his supervisors did ask questions, such as the time Ray brought in several surplus mobile homes from the Umatilla Army Depot to store equipment and samples. He didn't have agency building approval. The mobile homes didn't match any architectural plan or have any agency engineering specs, but they expanded the ability to do productive work without an increase in budget. After multiple tongue lashings from the area director and others, Ray got to keep a couple of the mobile homes and some surplus roofing. Several used Army trucks showed up in a similar manner without previous approval to increase the vehicle fleet. Needless to say, Ray did not read or obey, if it interfered with conducting research, the administrative rule book. So that was Ray. He put research first. I can appreciate this fact, too, in that when he came to Pendleton in 1971, there really was nothing there but a brand new building and a skeleton crew. He worked very hard in increasing the program by bringing in funding, which increased the number of scientists there in 1972 from two to eight in 1980. The program building involved as well increasing the research areas from the traditional tillage and residue management and fertility management to include stress physiology of wheat, machinery systems, and soil erosion. So by the time 1980 rolled around, he had truly had a multidisciplinary laboratory. And then just to illustrate that, there's the new building there on the left. In 1970, pretty much just a brand new building with nothing in it. And there it stands today. By 1980, he had fully built that facility up so that we had warehouses, storage space, lots of equipment, and workspace for laboratories and so forth. I'm also going to paraphrase here about Ray as a scientist and collaborator. Ray was totally dedicated to research. He could be rather stubborn and would argue strongly about research topics. However, when a person could make logical arguments or present an observation that would require a change in view, he could literally change his argument in the middle of a sentence, adapt the updated information, and proceed to develop new conclusions and ideas. His nature was never combative or destructive of the scientists he worked with. He was demanding of accuracy and logic and could at times seem gruff, but he was always ready to discuss research topics at length with most anyone. And that's Ray standing before a field experiment on one of Pendleton's field days that's held every year, probably from about 1980. I dug around quite a bit in the archives at the station looking for old photographs and data that could be attributable to Ray. And this was one of his very first experiments when he reported to Pendleton in 1971. He started this study, which looked at the effect of wheat plant spacing on growth and yield. And I thought it was very ingenious because it used a radial spoke design, and which meant that as you moved from the center to the outside of this design, you can see that the row spacing increases continuously. And in fact, you can see the interaction between plant growth and available water. If you look at that change in the physiological maturity of the wheat, you can see a change from yellow to green there. It's probably about the most optimal point for plant spacing. And I'm hoping to find the rest of that data to see if it was ever published, but so far I've not been able to find out if that's been the case. Ray was heavily involved in runoff and soil erosion. In 1977, he established a long-term erosion monitoring site several miles east of the station in the Blue Mountain foothills. The objective was to verify and modify the factors within the universal soil loss equation for application of the predominant winter wheat fallow system in the southern portion of the Columbia Plateau. And these are six of the big collector tanks that he had built for this experiment that would collect the sediment and the runoff from the experimental site. And that's Ray in 1977, the guy that's standing there with the red hat. That would be Ray talking to Wes Warren, the fellow who had fabricated those tanks inside the machine shop of the lab. And here's a scene of Ray operating the backhoe. He's digging a pit for the installation of those tanks. And he's doing something that he really dearly loved. He liked getting on the farm equipment and operate it. It gave him a great reprieve to get out of the office, away from the administrative responsibilities, and it reminded him of growing up on the farm at home in North Dakota. This is a young Joe Peichel. Joe just retired last year. He's now in Brookings, Oregon. He gave me some notes about this experiment. This is where one of those tanks ended up. You can see the half circle shape there. It's got a lid on it. There was a piping system that channeled the runoff and sediment from the erosion plot, which is directly behind the tank. It's bordered with sheet metal, and all that runoff and erosion went into that tank and was measured on a 24-hour basis. And there were many reports that are in the literature about this particular experiment. It was in continuous operation for about 12 years, fall of 78 till summer of 1990. And this is one of the studies here from 1993 by John Zizel, Ray Almaris, and Rich Greenwald. John Zizel was a hydrologist that Ray hired to work on this particular study. Anyway, this particular study looked at the C factor, which is probably the fourth C of research that Ray was attentive to. The C factor looks at, it's essentially the soil loss ratio between the amount of erosion you get off of your of conventional winter wheat, in this case the first treatment there, versus the control, which is continuous fallow. And you can see the difference here in these erosion rates in tons per hectare. Ray and his group found that the ratio here for this soil loss factor was 0.09, which was considerably less than what was reported for the USLE at the time, which was coming out of Pullman about 0.2 to 0.3, meaning that the erosion was far less than expected. The other thing about this study is that it showed that up to 70% of the total erosion was occurring with only 10% of the runoff events. If you look at this line right here and come down to that, 10% of the runoff events was responsible for 70% of the erosion. And about 50% of the runoff events was captured about 100% of the total erosion. And what this suggested to Ray was that the erosion in this part of the Columbia Plateau was really controlled by winter rainfall events, short-duration, high-frequency events, and it wasn't occurring all the time. And the erosion was less than expected, and also indicated that that there was a lot of variability in soil and weather conditions within the region that was really quite a bit different from the conditions found at the conservation research farm where this research was being done in Pullman, Washington. And it indicated to the audience concerned with soil erosion that you could not apply the USLE uniformly within a region across the board, that you had to consider temporal effects as well. Another thing that Ray was really dear to was working on water transport in the soil plant system. And this is work that he performed with Ron Rickman. And again, you'll notice that in many of his publications, he's listed as a second or third author. And this has been a kind of an observation we've all made today, that Ray was never one to really promote himself. He promoted other people, primarily as scientists and as students. They are often first authors. This particular study, Ron Rickman and Ray Almaris did quite a bit of observations. They observed plant uptake of water and then also a water flux within the soil profile. And they were able to identify where in the profile, the changes within the soil profile, and when those changes were occurring. And they found that the wheat plant was using water all through its growth cycle, even during grain fill, way out here towards the end. And that quite a bit of the water, the peak water use was occurring right at anthesis. So at the start of the reproduction stage, the water started to taper off, but it was still important throughout the entire phase of the plant. These detailed observations that Ray helped Ron Rickman take really formed the foundation for the research that Ron Rickman and Betty Klepper were to undertake later in modeling the phenological development of the wheat plant. Another aspect of Ray's research world were the long-term experiments at Pendleton. This is an aerial view of the research center. And the center contains on experiment station land the oldest long-term tillage experiments in the western United States. And Ray saw that as a tremendous opportunity to look at soil quality and soil carbon relationships with respect to soil management. And he assigned his scientists to work on this. One scientist was Paul Rasmussen, and a study that came out in 1980, they looked at crop residual influences on soil carbon and nitrogen in a wheat fallow system. And they identified this point here, this is the soil organic carbon, the change in soil organic carbon, essentially at zero corresponds with a soil organic input rate of 2,000 kilograms per hectare per year, just to maintain carbon at a steady state. And this was probably the first detailed study in the region that looked at this, going back into when the work was initiated in the late 70s to 1980. And in the literature, you find that there's been well over 100 citations of this particular manuscript. It's one of the first ones done in the United States that has looked at carbon maintenance rates in dryland agro-ecosystems. A very significant study. Similarly, for the first time, Ray used the long-term experiments to study wheat straw composition and placement. He worked with Clyde Douglas, which was actually one of his graduate students that became got his PhD under Ray and became a Category 1 scientist within ARS and finished his career at Pendleton. And Clyde and Ray looked at the change in the composition of wheat straw over time, and they found that surface standing stubble and the surface and the residue resting on the surface after harvest essentially decomposed very slowly at a very flat rate here, but that if the straw was buried and exposed to temperature and moisture variation within the soil profile, the decomposition and the stability of the straw was a lot less. It was decomposed within the profile much faster and became less over time. And this was the first study of this type that had ever been done anywhere in the western United States. As well, Ray Almaris worked very closely with Joe Pikel, and in the early 1980s, they looked at physical and chemical properties of mala soils after 50 years of residue management. This particular study has been cited about 150 times within the literature. And what was unique about it was that Ray and Joe devised a method for taking minute increments of soil with depth. They developed a system for sampling every 2 centimeters, and they developed these depth profiles showing the change, for example, in organic carbon with these different management techniques, again, taking advantage of the long-term plots. This, for example, is straw plus manure, and you can see there's a lot more carbon in the upper part of the profile, as opposed to a profile where there's been quite a bit of repeated burning of the straw, a lot less carbon. So they quantified this at a time when probably there wasn't a lot of interest, but it became very salient today, as this is a very important topic. The same was true with soil pH, showing that the more basic soils with respect to the carbon that's imparted from straw and manure as opposed to the use of inorganic fertilizers, creating more of an acid profile. Ray and his group was also key in changing the way combines are manufactured. These are combine harvesters that have chaff or straw spreading systems behind them. They recognize right off the bat that the older varieties of wheat, as opposed to the modern semi-dwarf varieties, were producing a lot more straw. And they devised a method for capturing that straw and quantifying its distribution or spatial distribution across the front of the combine, and developed these profiles that shows that proved for the first time that stock combines were not spreading straw adequately, and that Ray recognized that this was very important if one is to practice proper fertility management, that we need an adequate or an even uniform spread of chaff behind the combine. Instead, these spreaders were leaving peaks where there was a lot more straw right directly behind the combine, a lot less over towards the side of the combine. They even developed a prototype spreader that probably became something that, or a design that manufacturers could look at, because today most combines now take this into account, and it all goes back to this particular experience that Ray introduced in the mid-1980s. I'm going to share with you quickly some staff photos. Became a tradition at the station to have a joint Oregon State University ARS staff photo for each field day. So each year we can see staff, and here's Ray in 1982. Some other notable people, here's Betty Klepper. Some notable, here's Joe Pikel, 1982. Vance Pumphrey was an OSU scientist. And I believe that's Steve Lund here, the OSU superintendent at the time. Here is Ray in 1983. He would have been about 57 at this time. And again, more of the staff. And here's Ray in 1984, the year, the last year he was at the station before he left to go to Minnesota. And then I have to talk a little bit about why I left Pendleton. And this is in 1985, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit here. Okay. Ray was totally dedicated to research and ignored certain procedures if they got in the way. We all know that. In addition, Ray would not back down over certain administrative issues, which led to some serious interagency friction that had to be cooled down by official decree from higher supervisory levels. This is a paraphrase from Ron Rickman. Eventually, all these things led to Ray's dismissal in 1985. He had no choice but to leave Pendleton and go to St. Paul, Minnesota. But the silver lining in all this was that the transfer to a large university setting offered at St. Paul, Minnesota, where he could work without administrative responsibilities, allowed him to prosper. That was the silver lining. So I'm going to run through quickly Ray's contributions. I can appreciate this. He increased the physical resources and scientific capacity of the Columbia Plateau Conservation Research Center. That legacy is still there today for me to enjoy and research leaders who come after me. Ray recognized, his research leadership and runoff and erosion provided data to improve the USLE and to better define the water and sediment quality as related to soil management. That information about the soil erosion characteristics for eastern Oregon and the availability of residue for harvest was used by the NRCS for decision about erosion control practices that are still in use today. He recognized that a spatial uniform distribution of crop residues and combines was the first step in successful conservation tillage systems. At the time, this simple idea had yet to be acknowledged by manufacturers of straw chopping spreading devices. And interest in his research was immediate by farmers and industry in the U.S., Canada, Argentina, and Australia. As a consequence of his research, some manufacturers of straw chopping spreading equipment changed their designs to improve the distribution of harvest residues. He was among the first to recognize the importance of the long-term plots at Pendleton. He critically analyzed the impact of harvest residue or natural resource conservation long before it became a serious concern that it is today. As an expert in tillage and residue management, he provided visionary research leadership to evaluate the impact of changes in soil nitrogen and carbon caused by long-term residue and fertilizer practices and develop generic model that was mentioned earlier for testing the true value of residue harvesting on soil and water conservation. He essentially found that crop residue was not fully valued as a resource for soil and water conservation in proposals that at the time advocated residue harvesting. He was the first to identify and assess the adverse impact of soil acidity in the Pacific Northwest from the use of ammoniacal fertilizers, and he worked with other people in describing the silica migration and possible reduced internal drainage in soils caused by soil acidification. Another example was that he and his workers at Pendleton provided the first field-based measurements of residue decomposition as a response to soil management. And another thing that hasn't been mentioned much about Ray, and that is last year at Pendleton, he introduced unique soil ecological research that identified key soil environmental factors that favored pathogens and demonstrated that certain culture practices could be used to control the pathogen pests. Niches for survival of disease inoculants are found to be related to tillage systems. And compacted soil layers and crop residue placement, particularly in pea wheat sequences. And that was a very important realization that's in practice today or that's being used by growers of peas in northeastern Oregon. And I'll just conclude that with a statement from Betty Klepper that she cited to me recently this year, and I think it's probably pretty well summarized, but all that's been said about Ray today was that he was an excellent researcher, always thorough, persistent, and full of ideas. And I'll quit in with a picture of Ray on the left with some of the Pendleton people he worked with in the past. That Sue Waldman left next to Ray. She was a computer scientist that Ray had hired in the late 70s and retired at the station sometime in the mid-80s. Joe Peichel next to her, and Ron Rickman. And this took place at another California meeting at ASA in 1997. Thank you very much.